Your argument now in the case of Salini against Ashcroft. Ms. Fasciati.
May it please the court. I am the petitioner's attorney, all five of them, consisting of husband and wife and three daughters who were born in Macedonia and are Albanian. They came to the attention of the Immigration Service in 1993 when Mrs. Salimi and her three daughters attempted to enter the United States by presenting photo-substituted passports. Mr. Salimi, who was then a permanent resident, accompanied them, and exclusion proceedings were initiated against the whole family. This court is aware of Mr. Salimi's situation because Mr. Salimi was before this court, and this court entered a decision affirming the denial of a waiver under Section 212D of the Immigration Act.
Right. We are, in fact, familiar with this case, and I wonder if you could get right to the question that troubles me about your position, which is that we're at the motion to reopen stage, where there is, in fact, very broad discretion lodged in the board to decide whether to reopen these kinds of proceedings. I'll lump everybody together for this, although I realize Mr. Salimi's case is somewhat different from the others. But how can we find an abuse of discretion on these facts?
Well, the abuse of discretion is a standard that we know goes back to Abudu and other Supreme Court cases. My position has been over the, especially since 1986, with the statutory allowance of motions to reopen by statute, that it's not so much a question of abuse of discretion in the sense that they should, that unusual deference should be given to the administrative agency as to when and how they will entertain a motion to reopen.
But the Supreme Court has even said that motions to reopen are disfavored. There's a strong public interest in closure. Now, that's not to say, of course, that there's no such thing as a motion to reopen, and I recognize that you're basically arguing that there must be some set of cases which qualify for reopening, and possibly even some within that set where it would be an abuse of discretion not to do it. But I want to know, I need a little more concreteness as to what we're supposed to think about when we are applying these standards.
When the Supreme Court in Abudu and Wang stated that motions to reopen were disfavored, they were relying solely on the regulations on reopening 8 CFR 3.2C, which were framed in the negative. But Congress has since allowed for motions to reopen in the statute. It has placed limitations on motions to reopen and numerical and time limitations, which should take care of some of these problems. But nonetheless, it has allowed and does allow for motions to reopen in asylum cases where one can show a materially changed country condition or circumstances that would make it more likely that a person would be persecuted in their home country. I wish to point out, however, to the court that Mrs. Salimi was ordered deported in 1993, yet the Immigration Service has never effectuated her deportation. It is an implicit understanding that if she were to be deported to Macedonia,
I take it, however, that she didn't leave either.
Well, I take it that she wouldn't want to have left.
Excuse me, counsel. She was under a legal order to depart and did not obey that order. Your position seems to be that an order of deportation just has no effect until you get the bag and baggage letter.
An order of deportation is unlike an order of voluntary departure. When a person is ordered deported, it is a passive command. It is not an active command. A person is ordered to leave the United States voluntarily. You shall leave the United States on a day certain. In this case, she was ordered excluded and deported. Consequently, if she left of her own volition, she would still be considered deported. The fact of the matter is that she...
I take it when your clients finally got the bag and baggage letter, they did not report for deportation either.
They sure did.
They did?
She did, yes. She did, because I was her attorney, and I presented her to the deportation officer.
So all of them reported?
The whole family. Mr. Salimi was in the Court of Appeals at that time.
Somebody issue a stay?
Yes. I filed a stay, and the deportation officer told me the conditions in Macedonia, especially at that time, were still very unstable, and they weren't executing orders of deportation.
Are we talking about this April 9, 2001?
Yes, even
order.
At that time.
So you had filed the application for asylum and withholding a few days before that, April 5.
It was the bag and baggage order.
And she gets the bag, but you filed the application for asylum and withholding a few days before the April 9 date.
Right, but I also
and
filed...
And you did show up with her on the 9th.
Oh, absolutely. With a request for a stay of deportation.
With the request for the stay,
correct.
Which the agency granted. Is there like a piece of paper that says...
I never got a decision on the stay. I just reported with her, filed the stay. And normally what happens is that while the stay is pending, they will defer a decision to remove an alien or deport them until the stay is adjudicated. If my recollection serves me correctly, I've never gotten an adjudication on the stay. All I got was a verbal assurance by the deportation officer that we're not removing people to Yugoslavia, or words to that effect, as I recall. Mr. Salimi was another case. Mr. Salimi came to this court and was denied a stay. But again, he never got a bag. He did. My memory is pretty vague, and not just because of this case, and I'm not trying to be deliberately evasive, but I don't recall if he specifically got a bag and baggage order. He must have, because I wouldn't have filed a stay. But they, again, never asked him to report subsequently for deportation, and he was winding his case through the courts, as this court well knows. I never filed for a stay when Mr. Salimi filed his motion to reopen, for whatever reason. Again, he hasn't received a bag and baggage order, so this is not an evasive attempt here. The country conditions in Yugoslavia were sufficiently bad that the Immigration Service wasn't routinely enforcing these orders because they had no place to put these people. They couldn't get a plane that would go to Zagreb, for example, or to Belgrade, God forbid, so that these people could be effectively removed. That wasn't the case.
They weren't removing them. I mean, of course, by this time, by 2001, there isn't the old Yugoslavia isn't there anymore. We're dealing with Macedonia, aren't we? Or were they thinking that these were all fungible? You know, Serbia.
Well,
Croatia.
I think that in some respects they were, but they had quite a bit of United Nations peacekeeping.
Oh,
there was a lot of turmoil there still, and I can't judge the wisdom. Although I like it when the Immigration Service doesn't want to execute a deportation order, but I can't prevent it from happening if they choose to do so. And in this case. For whatever combination of factors, this family has remained undisturbed while these applications of motions to reopen were winding their way through the administrative system.
But getting back to my other question, obviously there's a great variety among the different changes in country conditions that might be presented to the agency to try to get yourself under that exception to the time limits and all the rest of it, number of petitions to reopen. At what point does it become an abuse of discretion for the agency not to say, well, yes, you have in fact shown changed conditions, we will now proceed on and adjudicate your motion? Because I take it you're really just at the threshold, you're just trying to get them to look at the motion.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's very, my research of the BIA decisions, and again, I only get the ones, I see the ones that are reported in interim decisions, and there's a whole host of others that we never see, or at least I can't lead through. But I've seen it only once in one case that I can remember and recall specifically, and that was involving Afghanistan, where they reopened the case for material change in circumstances. And then again, there are other cases from the board that are to the contrary involving the same country, Afghanistan. It's a judgment call for the board. It would appear, in my opinion, that if the State Department has a policy of non-alignment with that particular country, that the Board of Immigration Appeals will more generously reopen a case, regardless of the merits of the underlying application.
But your position can't be that the Board has unfettered discretion to decide whether agency conditions have changed, because then this appeal's over. If their discretion is absolutely 100%, we could never find an abuse of it, could we?
No, you can't, and that isn't my position. My position is the board was inclined to ignore the evidence, then it is an abuse of discretion.
You're saying the board wasn't looking at the evidence of what had changed from the 2001 or 1998 or whatever year.
These cases started at a very specific timeline factually in country conditions, beginning in March and April. These applications would have never been refiled if there wasn't enough evidence to persuade me that the applications had merit. And in fact, there is quite a bit of evidence and voluminous documents regarding this time period. We can go back to the history of Macedonian Albanians until the flood comes home, but the Albanians still have had always a hard time in Macedonia, and Kosovo simply ignited the crisis even more.
But what's your answer to the board? I realize you're running low on time, but I really want to hear this. What's your answer to the board's argument in response that, according to your logic, virtually everyone of Albanian and whatever nationality or ethnicity is entitled to asylum in the United States?
Well, statistically, the INS statistical yearbook for the year 2002, which breaks it down by country, showed that in 2002, 76 individuals applied for asylum from Macedonia. From Macedonia. They don't break it down by Albanian and non-Albanian and Turks and yes and what's and who's.
Mm-hmm.
But they break it down by country. 76 in the whole of 2002 applied for asylum, and 41 were granted. Now, that does not suggest an opening of the floodgates. For one thing, most Albanians can't swim, fly, or sneak into the United States in the large numbers that we think they might sneak into. They're too poor to afford passage, and now they're just barely able to afford shelter. I don't think they're all going to be flying to the United States if the Salimi family gets asylum, or at least the Salimi family gets the right to be heard in a deportation hearing. I don't, the statistics by the INS, which of course the respondent has not cited to this court, don't suggest a floodgate argument the way it is trying to imply. 76 applications is not a floodgate, in my opinion.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Peachy. Ms. Fasciati, counsel table, please.
May it please the court. My name is William Peachy, and I represent the Attorney General in these consolidated cases. The issue before the court today is whether the board abused its discretion in denying the petitioner's motions to reopen. And as the court's recognized, it's a very high standard. That standard is highly deferential, and it recognizes the disfavored status of motions to reopen, particularly in the context of immigration cases, for the undue delay, and also recognizes the concept of finality.
But what does undue delay have to do with the price of beans if, in fact, the changed country conditions didn't materialize until, let's say, 2001? The fact that they weren't asking to reopen before they had any ground to do it could hardly be held against them. And if, in fact, it's the case that it's not their fault that they've been, you know, that they've been presenting themselves in appropriate ways and appropriate times to the authorities, they haven't just gone on the lam, you know, to try to avoid removal from this country. It's not clear to me that the delay means anything under that very particular set of facts. If the problem, you know, if we didn't start ethnically cleansing the Albanians until 2001, then why would they have even bothered to file in 1999?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that there are those are two separate inquiries. As a preliminary matter, I'd note that they haven't fully cooperated. They haven't presented themselves as you represent. They were granted, or at least for Ms. Salimi and her daughters, were granted voluntary departure, and they failed to depart, and they agreed that they would.
But they had filed, as I understand the record, they filed on April the 5th this petition for asylum. The removal order wasn't to take effect until April the 9th, so they were presenting themselves through this filing to the agency before the date of the removal. I have no knowledge about what oral representations may or may not have been made by the immigration officers, but it does seem to me that I've seen a lot worse in the sense of people just sort of disappearing for a while, I'm sure you have too.
Well, Your Honor, you're correct that there's not a lot in the record about, there's nothing in the record about the representations and made by INS officers, anything like that.
How about the regulations? If there's a pending petition for asylum, that has not yet been adjudicated by the agency, does the agency just sort of deny it by default if the departure date comes? Or what's the procedural status of such a, of this kind of situation?
Okay, first of all, that's not the situation in this case.
What? You disagree that she filed her petition on April 5th and that the order was to leave on April the 9th?
She filed her motion to reopen.
No, that's not what I am referring to. I understood that she filed her application for asylum and withholding of removal on April 5th, 2001. Then on May 7th, she filed the motion to reopen, but she filed the application for asylum 4 days before she's ordered to present herself for deportation in St. Louis.
Yes, Your Honor, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
This matters to me only because I think I have a concern similar to Judge Easterbrook's. If she had not even made herself known to the agency until after the date for the deportation had passed, it would, to me anyway, fall into a different kind of group of cases, because those people have simply disregarded an order of the agency, not in any way tried to get the agency to reconsider its order. But I would take an application for asylum and withholding as some kind of communication with the agency.
And I would agree with that, Your Honor. But you have to look at that in the context of the fact that they were ordered deported in 1994, agreed to voluntary, requested and were granted voluntary departure, and failed to take any action until the INS actually issued the order, actually issued the letter, seeking to implement the deportation.
Right, I understand.
So for that period, they took no action at all, including leaving, which they had agreed to do. But I believe that there's, getting back to your original question, you know, I believe there are two separate inquiries. You've got the standard of review, which is highly deferential and includes the concept of finality. At some point, there's public interest in bringing everything to a close if they have an opportunity, a fair opportunity to present their case.
Right. No, I understand that. But what bothers me about that is how this particular agency order takes into account the actual facts about the right to reopen in that last sentence, unless you can show changed country conditions. It seems to me that can't be a nullity, and I'm concerned about this order, which appears to be looking backward at a time before country conditions changed, which strikes me as not really what that last sentence of the regulation is all about.
I'm sorry, could you...
The thing about motions to reopen, that there's a certain time period that you have to file a motion to reopen unless there are changed country conditions, and that's the... We haven't actually gotten to the adjudication of this motion because
right.
The board thinks that there aren't changed country conditions, but you can't say that they should have shown changed country conditions in 2001 for things that were going on in 1999.
That's correct. Country conditions change daily, hourly.
Well, this country, oh please, I mean, you know, this country has really changed, you know, from the United States has even had troops there as a result of some of the things that are going on.
That's true, there's been significant changes. And the board recognized that there were significant changes by saying there's civil unrest. But a review of the
ethnic cleansing should be called civil unrest?
I don't believe that the board found that there was ethnic cleansing, and I don't believe the record establishes there was ethnic cleansing. That's how it's characterized in petitioner's brief. But if you review the record, as the board did, and you look at items such as the State Department report, it shows basically a government that is responsive to that is facing problems. It establishes the fact of a conflict. It establishes the fact of armed insurgents attacking military and police, and military and police response by the government against that insurgency or against those rebel actions, and a government that has representation by ethnic Albanians at high levels of both the government and the military. It simply doesn't show ethnic cleansing. It shows abuses, and it shows government responses in terms of establishing the Office of Ombudsman, investigations, and in some cases, payment of damages. One can argue whether those are sufficient or not, but it would be difficult to argue that the government is actually responding to those issues.
Well, I'm looking at the BIA order, for instance, in Mr. Salimi's case, which discusses past events. The applicant was never arrested, detained, or otherwise bothered. He's visited Macedonia in the past, blah, blah, blah. I just don't see where it's focusing on the change.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Slimmy is seeking to reopen because of changed country conditions.
That's what I thought.
Exactly, Your Honor. For asylum, withholding, and cat protection. He's had his asylum and withholding cases or claims adjudicated by the immigration court and by the board.
Right, no, I understand that, but I guess his point is that it's now different. I mean, if somebody of Jewish ethnicity and right before Hitler took over Germany had applied for asylum, you might have said, well, it's fine to send them back to Germany, but afterwards it was a different situation, and maybe you wouldn't send that person back there. And I don't know. I mean, we haven't had the adjudication yet in this case, but I'm just not, I can't find where the board is talking about the magnitude of the change or any of the evidence in this order.
Right,
they're talking about all this past stuff, which isn't what he's trying to raise.
You're right, Your Honor. He is arguing that this somehow, these changed country conditions, buttress.
A new problem if he's sent back, because as an Albanian male from this particular region, he's going to be swept up by one of these police groups of the Macedonian police and shot.
Yes, Your Honor, that's what he's alleging. And that's not what the record establishes, that's not what the board found. If you go past the section, the way I read the board's decision...
The board found he's had no problems in the past.
Which addresses the past persecution element of asylum.
Which is not what we're trying to talk about.
Exactly. And the board also looked at the fact that he had visited without repercussion.
Doesn't say when.
It does not say
in
when.
The past. So what if it's before the change that he's trying to prove?
Then it moves on in addressing the cat aspect of it to explain the board's determination that violence committed, for the proposition, violence committed by individuals over whom the government has no reasonable control doesn't implicate the treaty.
But why is that the record that was put before the board when it was clearly government people that they're talking about? Government soldiers, government police.
I'm not sure it is clear. They are talking about that, I agree, but I believe...
Certainly
go back
in the record. I mean, the board never tells us why they don't choose to believe that information.
Well, the CAT requirements require... one of the requirements for CAT is acquiescence. And the actual knowledge or the willful blindness element for acquiescence is, I believe, what they're addressing there. And they're saying... the way I read it, is you haven't established that element to a reasonable likelihood that you'll be able to establish it giving a full hearing. Therefore, they deny it. Now, I notice my time is up. If I may quickly summarize.
Thank you, Mr. Peachy. Thank you, Ms. Fasciotti. The case is taken under advisement.